Shlomo Brody, I organize Executive Director of AMATAI. I want to thank Rabbi Weiner, my colleague and friend, and Rabbi Muskin for this initiative. And you know, I deal with, our organization deals with end-of-life issues, and I know a lot of stories. I want to share with you a beautiful story. I'm going to change the names, obviously I don't want to have all the details, but we'll just call them the couple Jack and Jill. And Jack's about 75, he's had serious cardiac failure in a really serious state. And just brought him from a heart attack. And he looks at Jill, who's his high school sweetheart, and says, "Jill, when I broke my foot on the baseball field, we're in 18, and you took care of me, and that's how we met, you were there for me. You were there, right?" And he says, "Yes, Jack, I was there. And when we were 30, and I crashed our car after we got married, you were there for me, and you took care of me, and you stood by me." I said, "Yes, Jack, I was there." Again, I'm changing the names here, a little bit of the details. "And at 45, when I crashed my business, we were almost bankrupt, you stood by my side. You were there for me." And Jill says, "Yes, Jack, I was there. I was always there with you." And when I had my heart attack, you found me, and you brought me in, and took me to the hospital. You were there for me. And Jill said, "Yes, Jack, I was there." And so Jack says to her, "Listen, I've had three words that I've always really should have said to you. And I never said it properly. Those three words you need to hear." And Jill, with a tear, leans forward, and Jack says, "You're bad luck." Now, I start with a story of a joke. Oh, I ruined it. I was thinking, I'm telling you stories, but I story the joke because I don't want you to think that this is about death. We recorded that joke? Oh, no. But instead, friends, I want you to understand we're not talking about death here. We're talking about life. And what we're trying to talk about here is the life that we want to leave and the statements we want to make, that we want to establish for people when we get to a situation where we need other people to help us. And so what Rabbi Weiner and I have done together over the last period, based on something that Rabbi Weiner had started with Cedar Sinai as well, is to create a document which we think is sensitive to the needs of the Jewish community, which will help people in a significant way when you get to the point when you need someone to speak on your behalf when it comes to healthcare matters. Right? What we call advanced healthcare directive. Sometimes this has been called a halachic living will, but it's actually a little bit of a misnomer in some ways. And what I'm going to be presenting is this new document, which we call Netivot, which Rabbi Weiner had worked on with the input of many rabbis and lawyers and healthcare professionals and social workers to try to help us and set us up in a situation where if you're in a situation where you need someone to speak on your behalf, you are prepared. And I want to explain why. Can you get more copies? I want to explain why this is so important. You get into a healthcare situation and you can't speak on your behalf, or you're not fully able to speak on your behalf, you need to know who's going to speak on your behalf. The doctors want to know who's going to make decisions for you. Your family wants to know who's going to make those decisions. And so I want to get right to it, so I won't use our time wisely. You could, this moment, we have pens here as well. If anyone needs a pen as well, we'll find out. You could, at this moment, sign a living of a legal document that will be binding and that will help you. Right? Rabbi wants to send out a pen as well. Get out. No one needs. And this will be usable in the state of California and anywhere else. Everyone here is from California. There's no Canadians. This is a multi-state document. We do have a Quebec version and an Ontario version online as well. Okay, let's go right to it. Okay, we're going to explain to you as we go through. You have instructions here in advance. And this is a really user-friendly document. It is color-coded, it's easy to fill out. So, but I'm going to go through with you and explain, right, what you would do in order to make this a legally binding. I have an echo here, right? Okay. All right. Personal information. This is a personalized document, right? Meaning you can't do this as a couple or as siblings, whatever it might be. Every person has to have their own document. Right? You fill in your name, your address, your date of birth, and telephone like you would for every other legal document. Anyone else need a pen? We have more pens if people need pens. There's a couple pens here. Pens.
Go. Pens.
And by the way, if you feel like, oh, I made a mistake, this is all free and online. Okay, everything we do in Amittai is free, it's online, and we're going to help you walk this through. Now you're going to designate, you put in your name, right? Your name, address, telephone, and date of birth. It's sort of basic type of information, nothing too exciting there. I designate the following person to act on my behalf if at any time I'm not able to make or communicate healthcare decisions for myself. This is what we know as a healthcare proxy or a power of attorney for healthcare affairs. I want to stress, this is only about healthcare decision making right now. This is not about financial decisions. It's not a financial proxy, this is a healthcare proxy. Who is the person that you would like? Yes, yes, absolutely. Who is the person that you would like to speak on your behalf? Now let's think this through for a moment. It could be a spouse. It could be a sibling. It could be a child. It might depend on your age as well and your health situation and those situations. Who do you want to be? Now you might say, well, I've got a few people in my life who I'd like to make these decisions. But our motto is to say you got to pick one. Why do you got to pick one? Because when you leave it open, or if you say they all have to agree, it's not a healthy situation. It causes a lot of problems. And particularly, what if not everyone's there? You're going to the hospital, God forbid. Two kids are there, a third's in Peru on vacation, and you've got a document that's got you stuck. So you don't want to have that situation. You want to designate a proxy. One person you decide, depending on your age and depending on your situation, who that person is going to be. Below hand, however, we give alternates because there are many times when you might say, okay, you know, I might say I want this son to be the proxy. But that son happens to be away, not available. And the hospital is going to say, well, who's next? He's not there. What do we do? And so you want to have alternates. You put alternates here and want to think this through. And I want to tell people, for some of us, this is obvious who we choose. So let's, for example, I'm 45. I would put down as my proxy my wife. Baruch Hashem, both of us in good health. Right? And then my next would be my brother. And then would be my mother, whatever it might be. Okay, so be some pretty simple for me. But let's say I was my mom. Baruch Hashem, my mom is 75. She and my father passed away. But she's married now, remarried. Who's she going to put down? You going to put down the spouse who's 78? Maybe, maybe not. You know, depending on the situation. Or you going to put down the kid who lives 3,000 miles away? Or you going to put down the kid who lives closer? But that kid might not have the same shared values as you in the same way. You got to think this through a little bit. Right? So there's a choice that has to be made here. And everyone's got to know their dynamic. And what we suggest is you designate one as the primary person and the next as the alternates. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean just because you said, I chose this kid, let's say, give a common example, that they're going to make all the decisions and what everyone else's opinion doesn't matter. Whatever you sign here today, whatever you sign in general, you should always talk over with your family members. I want to tell you about a horrible case I had where a woman designated her daughter as her healthcare proxy because she felt this daughter's in the healthcare profession, and this or that, and she had two kids, a daughter and a son. And she told the daughter, you're going to be my healthcare proxy. They get to the hospital when eventually this comes up, and the daughter's got authorized, and the son goes, you're the healthcare proxy? Mom never told me that. Right? Now, they got into a huge fight precisely because there wasn't a communication about this. So I want to stress, what we're trying to do today is, yes, to create something legal, but what is really most important is to talk about it afterwards, to make sure that you discuss with people what is your choice and explain to people. By the way, not everyone might like those decisions, but if you talk about it in a way, you'll get them to understand why you made that decision. And ultimately, that is your decision. So you've got a proxy. You've got alternate proxies. Turn to the next page. This is the legal part of the document. My proxy has full authority to make decisions for me about my health care, including end-of-life care, if I am not able to make or communicate health care decisions for myself. Meaning this kicks in. This is also a legal thing in states as well. But this kicks in at a moment when what?
You can't make decisions for yourself. Or it's been deemed that you can't make decisions. And here comes the Jewish part of the directive. This includes my desire, which I hereby direct my proxy, that all decision making about my health care should be done in accordance with Jewish law and custom. Okay? What are you doing with this document? You're declaring to your family members and you're declaring to your health care providers that Jewish law and custom, that framework matters to you. And you want those decisions to be made in that context. Imagine you go to any hospital, Reagan, Cedars-Sinai, it doesn't matter, right? You show these hospitals. How many ethnicities and religions do these hospitals deal with? A whole lot. And so you want people to have a document that they know something about you. And they know exactly what you fit and believe, and so this lays it out for them. The rest of the legal parts here is really stressing, I want this person to make these decisions. They have rights to confidentiality under the HIPAA laws, right? They have access to my health care issues. They can make decisions for any hospital or hospice or nursing home or convalescent home or home care, et cetera, et cetera. And then you make a statement which says that this is the person who I feel has my best interest in mind. We have worked with lawyers all across America to make this the strongest document possible. By the way, it's a different version on Ontario and Quebec because they have different laws, different cases, and different issues. In order to make this point clear, that we want the person that you choose to make decisions on your behalf to make those decisions. Not a healthcare board, not another doctor, person you choose. Okay? That is the legal part of this document. Now, if there's something here, by the way, you don't like, you can cross it out, or you can play around with this. And by the way, plenty of people take this document to their own lawyers and say, I want this to be the template and the basis for what you write up for me, which is also legitimate. But this document itself is totally sufficient. That is your legal document that you've declared here, including the handling of my body after my death. People should know. Made a little decision statement about that. Okay? You're giving people this power. Notice what you haven't done here. Who have you not given power to? Who have you not given power to?
Government.
The government, state for sure, right? You don't want them to make a decision. That's the whole point. You're making a decision. You also haven't designated, for example, any sort of generic thing of like a rabbi, a Jewish law, or whatnot. Why? We want it. We believe on a legal level, the most important thing to do is to figure out who you want to make those decisions. And so you should have conversations with those people. And Rabbi Weiner, as we're going through here, is our conversation guide momentarily. So the proxy will know exactly how you feel about things. But of course, you've also stated that you want Jewish law and custom to be governing your decision. Well, what exactly does Jewish law and custom mean? Can someone tell me what Jewish law and custom means? The answer is what you think is Jewish law and custom. Because we're all a little bit different. People have different worldviews and whatnot. And therefore, what is important right now is to clarify. Who do you want your proxy to consult with? Who do you want to be their posek or their rabbi, whoever it might be, in cases where a consultation is needed? This is a very important decision to make. I'll tell you an example why. We had a case. We have an amortized hotline. Someone calls me up and tells me the following. We've got the variety pack in our family. What's the variety pack? Okay, it's a modern Orthodox family, the parents. They got one kid who's in Lakewood. They got one kid who's in a place like Yick. They got another kid who's somewhat between Orthodoxy and I don't know wherever he is. They got another kid who's not religious. I think they had a fifth who made Aliyah. Who's making the decision? First of all, they had to decide that. Second thing, they had to decide, which rabbi are they calling? You know what happens if you don't designate who your rabbi is? Every rabbi gets called. And you know what happens then? They don't all agree with each other. Imagine that. This is your choice. Aselech HaRav. Make a decision. Very, very, very important. Particularly when you have different family members and different rabbis in your life. Right? Imagine you live in this community. Okay, imagine you go to Yates. You're very close to Rabbi Muskin. Wonderful. But it could be also that you're close with this person, your kids are close with that rabbi, this rabbi. Who do you want them to call? Bakasha, make that decision. It's so important. And I can tell you by the rabbinic level, you never want to be the rabbi who's being called. And the other sisters and the siblings are like, why are they calling that rabbi? It's a hard position for the rabbi. Make the designation. Sometimes a rabbi isn't available because a rabbi is in a mission to Israel. And so we say here, put an alternate as well. Rabbinic consultant, rabbinic alternate. Now, sometimes you might say, I don't know, maybe I want an institution. You can name it institution as well. So if you look in the back of the package, you can see Amatai is a real-time consult, 24/7. You are welcome to name us as your backup as well, right? In terms of if you need someone to say, my rabbi's not available, I want to be. I always recommend to people, choose a rabbi wisely. It could be you love a rabbi's drushot, but he's not the person who shares the same values on these issues. Talk to your rabbi about these issues. Right, Rabbi Muskie, I think it's fair to say, you want people to talk to you about these issues and know where you stand, and they stand on this as well. There's one other section, my friends, and that's it. And this relates to the issue of organ donation for transplantation. Now, as you might know, if you're here on Shabbos, you certainly know, there's a little bit of discussion within rabbinic circles about when organ transplantation is allowed. And so we were very careful how we formulated this. This section is relevant only if death as defined by Jewish law and custom has been determined by my proxy in consultation with my named rabbinic consultant. What have we done here? We're not following the laws of California. We're saying if death has been defined by Jewish law and custom, would you want organ donation to be possible? Some people would. Some people wouldn't. Some people want specific organs. You decide. Obviously, I recommend consulting with your rabbi, whatever it might be. That's it. That is a legally binding healthcare proxy and directive that you have. You sign it here at the bottom, and then you have a witness. Who are the witnesses? So I want to just explain something. There are other rabbinic organizations, wonderful organizations, that have state-bound directives. They have one for California, one for Ohio, one for Texas, and this and that. We did is we followed the American Bar Association. This is a multi-state document. In order to make a multi-state document, we make the requirements of the witness to be l'kola deos, as they say in halachic literature. We made the most machmer, most stringent position. The key points you can see here. It can't be the someone who you point as your proxy. It shouldn't be your rabbi. It shouldn't be someone who's financially responsible for your health care. Right? Anyone along those lines can't be a witness. Anyone who has a vested interest in the implications of your health care can't be a witness. You have many other people who can be witnesses. And if you want, you can sit down today, complete this, and look around you. I might imagine that there are some people in this room who aren't in your will. I'm insulted a little bit, right? But I imagine those people can be witnesses. You have a legally binding healthcare and directive. And when this gets to your healthcare provider, when you file it, one second, right? This will be a document that's provided tremendous amount of clarity and has answered who's going to make those decisions for you, who's the rabbi is going to be consulted with. With organ donation, and letting people know you want it to be in the framework of Jewish law and custom. Amazing. Simple. Simple in the sense that it's easy to use or friendly to fill out. And now you have it. Now, there's going to be a question which always is going to come up. Because let's say, I want you to think about it for a moment. Let's say you were designated as a proxy for a child, or a sibling, or a parent, whatever it might be. What's the first question you're going to ask? What's the first question as a proxy you would ask? I'm sorry? What are your responsibilities? You know now your responsibilities are. Your responsibilities are to make decisions on their behalf. What's the next question now going to be? Okay, so for sure you want to make sure that this document is preserved well. If you look on this page, we explain where you should put it to. Where it should be saved. Don't put this document in your safety deposit box. Don't save this with your financial will. You know why? It ain't going to help you at that point. All right? It's the type of document that needs to be filed properly in an accessible place. Many of your healthcare providers will have a place you can file it as well. And we set up with an organization of 24/7, 365 access with an app and whatnot. I think it costs like $35 or something like that. Okay? Not us, we outsourced it in terms of that. That way people can know anywhere in the world you can access this at any point. The first question you're going to be asked, though, if you're a proxy is, what would mom or dad want? I'm sorry? What this is written here is a mom and dad wants it to be done in the context of Jewish law and custom. But even within that world, there might be decisions that can be made. There's a certain amount of flexibility. The first question, Rav Hirschel Shaftos Shlita told me, when people say that and I want to make decisions, he always says to them, okay, what would you want? Within the context of Jewish law and custom. And so what we created now, which Rabbi Weiner now present, with his great chaplain experience, is a conversation guide which will help you think about and talk about these decisions. This is the legal document that you signed until now. This now is going to be a non-legal document. It's not something which is legally binding that you have to have signed. It is more than anything a conversation guide to give you an opportunity to talk to you and your loved ones about your general feel of these types of issues. And I can tell you that we don't know, what you'll see in our document is, we didn't create a document that says, if I have a car accident, and they want to know if I should be intubated or not intubated, they want to know if they should do this surgery or that surgery, I want or don't want it. Why do we not create a document like that? Who knows? Who knows? We're 55 running marathons. Are we going to feel the same way? We're in 75 in different situations. So we want to keep a creative conversation that allows you to talk about these issues, that opens the door for those conversations, but is keeping things open in general. So what we worked on really hard, I think Rabbi Weiner will agree that this is something that I think is very unique, is that there are other conversation guides out there in the market that aren't sensitive to the halachic needs in the Jewish community, and this is what we tried to create. Rabbi Weiner, take over.
So, thank you very much. As Rabbi Brody mentioned, we worked very hard on this, and indeed, not only is it a legally valid document throughout the country and North America, but we have rabbinic approval from Rav Hirschel Schechter and from Rav Mordechai Willig. They have reviewed the entire document and approved of them and said, we endorse them and encourage people to sign them, and that's very unique about this document. Also unique is that, first of all, you saw the first part, the actual legally binding document. It was unique that we added the opportunity for you to designate your rabbi. You don't have that in a general secular document, and an institution. So you could put, you know, you put Rabbi Muskin as my rabbi. But you might say, you know, let's say you're really young. You say, I want Rabbi Muskin to be around for a very long time. But let's say in 120 years, there's another rabbi, but this is the synagogue that, you know, whoever's the rabbi is in Israel Century City, so you put the organization. Then we have the opportunity for organ donation. All within halakhically valid framework, because it says based on what my rabbi considers would be valid. So it's going to be based on your community. We have the opportunity for witnesses. Also, if you prefer, in California, it's either two witnesses or notary. Some people prefer that notary is the gold standard. We have a notary here today. Yoni Segura is here. So we have a notary with us right now. Then what makes this really unique is that what many people had done, you know, there are in the Orthodox community some advanced directives. They're really proxies. They really simply say, here's my proxy, here's my rabbi, that's it. And so many rabbis end up being stuck trying to figure out, you know, what exactly, you know, you could get a call. This wouldn't happen to Rabbi Muskin, for sure not. And I'm not joking now, but it happens to me. You could get a call from someone and they say, you've been appointed as this person's rabbi. What do you know about them? And my first response is, do I know them? I don't even recognize the name. That would not happen to Rabbi Muskin because he knows everyone. He knows everyone, especially in his shul. But I often get these calls and I'm like, I don't know if I know this person. So it could be, but it would help every rabbi and help every family to still have a conversation about what are my values, what are my goals, what are my preferences, who am I? And the danger is saying specifically, who I am is I would never want a feeding tube in my nose, but I might be okay with one in my stomach. Or, how do you know? We never know, as Rabbi Brody mentioned. So what we try to do here, which is really unique here, is to create a guide to help us articulate what are our values, what are our goals. And we've asked this in very broad ways so that you're not locked in. But this exercise that we're going to do right now, briefly, is a unique opportunity. It's not an easy thing to think about or talk about, but it's very important. And it just helps to give a picture of who you are. It's, again, not legally binding, what we're going to do right now. but it helps you to paint a picture of who you are and what matters to you. So I'm going to read the questions, and I'll encourage you to mark them, and then also think to yourself, I should talk with my family about these issues that we're going to go through. Because when I get calls, also saying from people, I'm filling out my advanced directive. It's on page 11. What should I be thinking about? I just send them this document and I say, read through the questions. That's what you should be thinking about. Okay, page 11, top of the page. First, we need to talk about your own pain and risk tolerance. It's different for every person. What would you be willing to endure? So, first question. I value undergoing potentially painful treatments if they have the potential of prolonging my life, even if they will not cure my underlying illness and may lead to significant discomfort. So again, if you value undergoing painful treatments, if it could prolong your life, even if it's not going to cure you and it might lead to discomfort, but you would want to endure these painful treatments. So do you disagree with that? No, I would not want to endure painful treatments if it's not to save my life. Or do you agree and say, yeah, anything to save my life, I don't care how much pain I'm in, do whatever you can. So that would be strongly agree. Or it could be somewhere in the middle. You could be not sure. You could have no opinion whatsoever. You could leave it blank. But if you have thoughts about how much pain you're willing to endure, even if it's not to save your life, that's for the first question. Next question. Similar, but important differences. Check. You put a check mark. I value undergoing potentially painful treatments to try prolonging my life toward the goal of participating in a specific occasion, like a family wedding, bar bat mitzvah, or a birth, even if they will not cure my underlying illness and may lead to significant discomfort. So would you be willing to undergo pain to have your life prolonged, not to cure, but to be alive because there's a bris coming up or a wedding coming up, and you want to be able to be alive? You might not be there, but they could bring an iPad to the hospital room or whatever it is. But is that a value to you? Keep me alive for the bris or the wedding, even though it's going to be painful. Do you agree with that? Yeah, I want to be kept alive, even if I'm suffering, that I'm alive for the bar mitzvah. Or no, don't prolong my suffering just to be alive for that. That's the next one. Question 3. It is my medical team's responsibility to try to balance pain relief with maintaining my alertness. Right? Somehow keep you out of pain, but keep you awake. But when it's difficult to maintain both, what would you prioritize? Meaning being awake with pain or being out of it, so therefore you're not in pain. I value pain relief, even if it means I'm not as alert or awake, or I value alertness, even if that means I may suffer pain and other symptoms. Do you have a preference? In generally speaking, again, you might think I'm not sure about that. You can leave it blank. But in general, are you someone who prefers pain relief or alertness? Next, I value undergoing a high-risk procedure that might shorten or jeopardize my life if it could. And then there's going to be three separate options now that are all similar. If it could possibly cure my underlying illness. So would you want to undergo a high-risk procedure that's risky, it's dangerous, but if it might cure your illness, would you want to go for it in general? And the second question, very similar. I value undergoing a high-risk procedure that might shorten or jeopardize my life if it could possibly stabilize my condition but not cure my underlying illness. Now, a risky procedure for stabilization, not a cure. This is often an option we have. You can have a risky procedure that might give you some stability for some time, but it's not a cure. Do you want to undergo risk just for stabilization, not for a cure? Yes or no? And then, in a more extreme version of that question, I value undergoing a high-risk procedure that might shorten or jeopardize my life if it could possibly extend my life by any amount of time, a few days or weeks, but not cure my illness. Are you someone that says, put me through any pain, any risk, even to give me another day? Now, we gave you yes or no options in these, but you might have thought to yourself, well, I feel like this or that, I haven't thought about this, so there's room for comments. Remember, this is all just the gift for your proxy, for your rabbi, to help them know who you are. So all this, you don't have to be precise. It could just be we're trying to paint a picture of who you are. So you might have thought to yourself, well, if I'm in the hospital, then no, or, you know, like you might have had thoughts about that. You could put it in the comments. Yeah. Because all of these questions are within halacha, there's room for some patient autonomy. We often say that in Judaism, we don't believe in autonomy the way American values do. And there's some truth to that, but at the same time, there is room for autonomy as well. The rabbi's going to ask, and I've been with Rabbi Muskin, and the rabbi's going to say, well, tell me about yourself. I mean, do you want to endure pain? Some questions, there's no question. It's not an issue the rabbi's going to give you a yes or no right away. But sometimes it might depend on who you are, if you want to endure pain, if you want to. So these questions are all based on, but at the end of the day, it's the proxy and your rabbi that are deciding. These are just to help give them paint a picture. Yes, one more, and then we'll save questions for the end. No, the proxy gets the final decision. If the patient's not alert, then the patient can't speak for themselves. But if they wrote something clearly that what they want, then the proxy's job is to represent the patient's values, not for them to do what they feel like is the best. It's the patient. We're trying to represent the patient's values. Okay, next set of questions. Decision-making preferences. How do you make your decisions? These are some really important questions to think about. And this comes up a lot. As a patient, I generally prefer knowing, mark one of these three. What do you want to know? As little as possible about my condition and treatment? Only a general summary information about my condition and treatment? Or all the details about my condition and treatment? Are you someone that says, I want to know everything, keep me informed? Are you someone who feels like, I don't need to know every single detail? You might not have an opinion about this, but some people have very strong opinions about this. Now, more specific, and also comes up a lot. If I have a terminal illness, I prefer, mark one, not knowing how quickly it is progressing, only having a very general sense of my prognosis, or three, knowing the best detailed estimation for how long I have to live. Do you want to know all those gory details? Or are you someone who says, and this, by the way, we have patients in the hospital all the time, they'll have a sign on the door, they don't know they have cancer, something like that. Don't tell them. Okay, this gets into big legal trouble, but this comes up a lot. So, but oftentimes the family's arguing. I had a patient once, you're going to remember this, I'm not giving any details, who there was literally a sign on the door, don't tell the patient she has cancer. She doesn't want to, we don't want her to know. Patient leaves, I'm visiting the patient. By the way, don't tell my family I have cancer. I don't think they know. So, okay, so it's, true story, remember? So it's complicated, this. But what really helps is to know, what would the patient want, right? So you have three options there. Okay, next section. If I am deemed terminally ill, I would prefer. And remember, again, there's enough ambiguity here that it's within halakha. The rabbis will be able to agree with most of these opinions that, yeah, within halakha, these are not really halakhic decisions, but it helps to paint a picture of who that person is. And then you see the rabbi will give you guidance on how to tell. For example, it says tell them, but you're going to need your rabbi to guide you through, okay, you want to know everything? You better have your rabbi there helping to guide how to tell them everything, because that's also an issue. Okay, next. If I'm deemed terminally ill, I would prefer, one, treatments focused only on comfort and managing my symptoms, such as just pain management. Remember, this is for a terminally ill patient. Number two, treatments focused on comfort and managing my symptoms, while also being open to potentially painful treatments or procedures that might extend my life. So this person is not saying, I only want pain. I might be open to some life-prolonging treatments, even though it's not life-saving, life-prolonging. Or number three, treatments focused on extending my life without prioritizing my comfort. Even if I'm terminally ill, God forbid, I don't care about comfort as much as I do about getting every possible day that I can get. Again, you're going to have room for comments at the bottom because you might not have a simple yes or no here. You might want to leave some blank if you're not sure. Final section here on this page. Page 3 of this conversation guide. If I have an irreversible lack of cognition, as in cases of advanced dementia or severe brain injury, right? The person doesn't know what's going on. They're not going to. Then I would prefer, one, treatments focused only on comfort and managing my symptoms, such as pain management, same as before. Treatments focused on comfort and managing my symptoms while also being open to potentially painful treatments or procedures that might extend my life. Or finally, treatments focused on extending my life without prioritizing my comfort. Same as the previous question, but this one's just different because the person is totally unable to understand what's happening. So again, these are important questions about how much you want to know and those kinds of details. Now, finally, last couple sections here.
So if the person can make their own decision, they don't even want to see
Well, the proxy's job is then going to be, yeah, we want you to say as much as you can about yourself. Because the proxy's job is to represent who you are. So if it's simple, it's a black and white kind of question, they say, oh, they said right here, this is, let me represent their values. But sometimes the questions are a little bit more gray or complicated, and we need to know about who you were. So looking at this, how you answer that question will help them make the decision that might be more complex. Now about your physical and social independence. And once again, these ones on this page 4 of the conversation guide, this comes up so much. And this leads to so much family strife. Again, a lot of what we're doing with this is trying to prevent family feuds. Because the families fight when they're fighting over what would the patient want. But when you can give them the details, you can relieve the fighting, relieve the stress of the family, of your healthcare providers, of your rabbi, and relieve the guilt. Because at the end of the day, they are going to have to choose something. And they might feel guilty about what they chose, but if they know this is what they wanted, it relieves all that. This is so important. I can't tell you how important this stuff is and how much it comes up in the hospital. Okay, your independence. This is so relevant. I worry about, again, this is just to help know who you are. I worry about needing someone to help me with basic daily activities, such as eating, bathing, getting dressed. Do you disagree and say, no, I'm not worried about that. Like, people will take care of me. I change my kids' diapers if they have to change my diapers. Like, I'm not worried about it. Or do you strongly agree? Do you strongly agree and say, yes, I worry about this. I worry about my social independence and you know, being able to eat on my own. Okay, next. This is also important because this comes up a lot. Feeling that I'm an excessive burden to others. Are you worried about feeling you're a burden? And you might think, yeah, everyone does. No one wants to be a burden. But no, you might say, like, just like I take care of others, they could take care of me. And I'm not so worried about being a burden. Like, that's what family does for each other. Just, it could be important for conversations to know how much do you worry about being a burden to others. And finally, being alone and feeling lonely. How much do you worry about being alone and feeling lonely? And again, it might seem obvious. Yeah, I worry a lot. I don't want to be alone and be lonely. But, you know, some people like to be alone. So you might say, no, I want to be alone. I'm fine with that. So how much do you worry about that? This is, again, could be very relevant for people in your life to know how much you worry about that. If it became difficult for me to live in my home, I would value. Again, people make these decisions for their, oftentimes, parents and grandparents a lot. This question is crucial. If it became difficult for me to live in my home, I would value. Number one, being cared for in the home of a family member. Again, this is not saying you have to. Right? Maybe you say, you know what, we don't have a place for them. So this is not obligating, but it's just saying, how much would you value it? Do you strongly disagree? You might say, no, I don't want to be in someone's house. I don't want to be that's a burden. I'd rather, you know, or you might say, yes, I want to be at home. I don't want to be in some facility. Everyone has different feelings. Do you strongly disagree that I would value being cared for in a home, or do you strongly agree? No, I want to be in someone's home or somewhere in between. How about being cared for in a nursing home or long-term care facility? Is that something that you value? In other words, strongly agree. Yes, I want to be in a place where there's professionals, where there are activities, you know, where there's a caterer, or I'm trying to make it sound like it's delicious. Or might you say, no, disagree. I would never, and I saw a few of you already, and I read it say to the people next to you, I do not want that. Some people might say, I do not. Or you might say, some of you might say, you know, if it's one of those places on Burton Way, okay, then I want to. If it's one of those places in, I'm not going to say, then I wouldn't want to. I'm just joking, but I'm really not joking. Because you might say, it depends on the place. And you might have even an idea. Oh, this place I want. I'm not going to say names. And you put it in the comments. That's relevant. Because families, we get this all the time. The families go looking, I don't know. Would they want to be here? Would they want to be there? Would they want to be in my house? It could help a lot. Finally, remaining in my home, even if it meant limitations in the amount of skilled medical care I could receive. I want to be at home as long as possible. Strongly agree. Or might you say, again, this is as if possible. Or you might you say, no, I don't agree. I don't need to be at home if there's no professionals there, that I don't have the proper health care. And then room for comments, again, about your physical and social independence. And finally, last thing. We gave you even more space to just write. Because what a lot of rabbis used to do, or still do, but before the Nativot came and saved the day, what often happened is that rabbis would say, okay, here's an advance directive. Here's the halachic living will. You just appoint, you know, your proxy and your rabbi. And then, if you don't mind, let's add, in legalese, we call it a rider. A rider means you write a little bit about what your values are and what you like, and then we'll just staple it on. So here we have the rider, so to speak, included. The goal is here now, anything that just came up for you, when having these conversations? Are there things you think that they need to know? Things your family should know, your loved ones, or sometimes it's different, but some, you know, or your friends, or whoever it is, that they should know about you? And in particular, we gave you some prompts. Not just, okay, you have space here to write, but also, and some important prompts about what I have found are the most common questions that come up. So I'm going to just read this to you, and then we're going to conclude with that. If you would like to share any further thoughts, please do so here. You may elaborate on your healthcare preferences, emphasize particular guidelines that are important to you, or express any concerns you may have about aging or end-of-life care, including invasive procedures, pain management, organ donation, and decision-making. So you have your space here for the writer that I mentioned, or just any other thoughts you have to write. But now here's some prompts. You may also use this space to express your preferences about where and with whom you'd want to be at the end of your life. Right? There could be people that you don't want to be there. You could include maybe funeral preferences. I want to have so-and-so speak. I don't want to have so-and-so speak. I don't want this person there. I want that person there. I want this song played. Things like that. I would want to be at home. I would not want to be at home. In the hospital, they often assume patients would rather die at home. I often have patients tell me, I don't want to die at home. It will scare my family to be in our house. They'll think, you know, or some people say, no, I don't want to die in a hospital as this place. I'd rather be at home or my loved one. So that could be an important thing to write here. Also, what would you describe as a good death or a bad death if you have thoughts about it? And a good way to do that might be to say, you know, I hated how Uncle David suffered so many painful procedures. Or I admired how my friend Sarah for fighting till the end. You might, or everyone in your family might know, if I don't want a death like Uncle so-and-so. And everyone in your family, oh, yeah. Or you might say, no, you know, the way so-and-so died, that was a beautiful death. If you have that, I know it sounds like morbid, but it's also a really important thing to think about and to share with your family. It can really help them making these decisions. You might also simply say, finish this sentence. What matters to me at the end of life is? What matters to you? Simple question, but a very profound question, maybe the most important question. What matters to me at the end of life is? And you have space to write. It could be more mundane things. We talked about a lot of things in this last hour. You're going to see a lot of interesting booths now. We'll open the doors in a minute after you have any questions or any last comments. There might be other mundane things, you know. There might just be simply about, you know, I joked before, let's say Rabbi Muskin's retired in Israel or something. But no, track down Rabbi Muskin. I don't care who the rabbi is. You guys will track him down. Whatever it is, whatever you want to write here, that things we talked about, anything that you just want to make sure your family knows. Yes. Yes. So as Reverend Brody said, this is a legally binding document everywhere in the United States and Canada. It's totally valid, and you can have it either sent to your healthcare provider, and they'll upload it to your chart. And the way advanced directives work is that whatever has the most recent date on it will overwrite anything that was before it. So if you were to put this will now be your valid advanced directive, and it will override anything that
and
was in the
past. You should collect old ones that ideally, are around. Yes. But
who do you give it to?
So you should give it, first of all, anyone mentioned in it, your proxy and your rabbi should have a copy. And if you have a lawyer who's preparing like estate planning, they should have it. Your healthcare provider, if you're at Cedars, you're welcome to send it to me or I can just tell you, there's an email address at Cedars that you just send it to and they upload it to your chart, or I do that for people all the time, or just give it to your primary care physician and they'll take care of it for you. They should have. Rabbi Klinsky, I have one more question.
Second thing, I appreciate the conversation, questions. Questions, when posed to individuals, you're going to get different responses from the same person at different stages in their lives. So someone who's 45 and has a whole bunch of symptoms waiting to happen and wants to be alive to celebrate those, and a person who's 85 who's in a great deal of pain may say, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, feel the need for any extraordinary care. So I think that the point I wanted to make is that people need this in mind. And you write, if you sign this today, you may want to look back at it 5 years from now, 10 years from now, because this may not be the binding document that really had intention.
That's absolutely correct. This is the type of thing you want to update. And you know what's so easy? Especially with the conversation guide, it's not legally binding. You know what you do? You just rip up the old one, you go to our website, you download the new one, and more than filling it out, you just talk to the loved ones about it, and you update them. That's an absolute correct point. All right, yeah. We recommend every 5 years you should look at these things over. And of course, as you get older, if your healthcare journey takes its turns in different places, you're going to do it more frequently as well. Yeah. So the hospital is going to be utilizing is your proxy and directive. That's the legal part. And because you've told your proxy what you want in the non-legal part, the proxy then will be able to go and say to the hospital, listen, I discussed this with my loved one. I know what my loved one would want, and I would like to facilitate now that they have to be brought home. The hospital.
Yeah, no. Obviously, if it's not possible, or then they won't. They can't do it. So this is just if there's an option. If there's options, then you follow this.
Not
if there's no option,
it's not possible.
Right.
Are you?
I recognize that it wasn't focused on the topic, but just towards the end of the yesterday, talked about the time. Yep. Some of the younger people do it. What about family planning? Do you consider that expanding some of the questions in the eye? Some of the younger people.
So first of all, what Arya just asked is, Arya questions, we would create something like this for other areas as well. For child care, who would be responsible, or for financial matters and whatnot. So first of all, by the way, for those of you who are, let's say, like you're 70 plus, you might want to talk to your kids about this as well for them, and not just, right, call a couple of you guys, for coming to this thing. This is a document which is a do-it-yourself, ultimately, right? In other words, we feel that we can create the document which you can have legally done, right, and this works. When it comes to financial issues where there are little mistakes here or there, do-it-yourself is not always so advisable. And so what we're working on a little bit is more like checklists and advising and stuff like that, as opposed to DIY model. That's a bit of a balance that we have to be careful.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're going to have to wrap up. And people can still ask questions. We'll still gather here for questions. But let's just open the, we'll open the doors now, because we have another presentation in 10 minutes. We'll open the doors now. You have an important point to make? Yes.
Is this document available to any hospital in the
country? Any hospital in the country will recognize. You can download as many copies as you want. It's a free service.
There's also an option on the AMITI website that you can, there's an option also to upload it to a cloud to make sure that it's stored somewhere as well. You'll see that on their website. The youngest age is, there's no youngest age, but we often tell people at age 16, when they start driving, they should consider having an advanced directive.
Uh-huh.
That's a good point.